Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 8th of July. Tomorrow night on Frontline on PBS, a not-to-be-missed documentary, Two American Families, is the title of the film. It follows two Milwaukee families for more than 20 years, the Stanleys and the Newmans. 20 years ago, Jackie Stanley and Tony Newman had union family-supporting jobs at Briggs & Stratton. Claude Stanley had a good-paying job at A.O. Smith. And then their jobs went overseas. And the film documents what has happened to the lives of Tony and Terry Newman and their three children, and Jackie and Claude Stanley and their five children. For the Newmans, the mortgage company calls with constant threats of foreclosure. The children offer to sell their baseball cards to help their parents. They are on the receiving end of charity. They finally get employment, but it's minimum wage or barely above, and they never get to see each other because one works the night shift and one works the day shift. For the Stanleys, there are pleas to keep the gas on, to keep the lights on. Claude, over the years, has had many different jobs, but the pay is not great and the benefits slim or non-existent. Jackie becomes an entrepreneur. She works in real estate for a while, but that is problematic. We'll talk about why. What's really striking about both families is how hard they work, and they barely survive, even in one of our most prosperous decades. This hour, we should also tell you the correspondent for Two American Families is Bill Moyers, and this show will be on tomorrow evening, and it's worth seeing. We have the filmmakers with us this hour of the program to talk about their extraordinary work. They are both Emmy Award-winning producers, directors, and writers, and they are co-executive producers at Opaki Productions. Kathleen Hughes is one of our guests, and she is heavily involved in this film. She's been, from 2008 to 2011, executive producer of WNET's multi-platform series Blueprint America, overseeing creation of reports about the crumbling infrastructure in America for a wide range of public media outlets. Kathy, thank you so much for being with us.
Happy to be here.
And also joining us is Tom. How do you pronounce your last name, Tom?
Cachado.
All right. I just wanted to make sure I got it right, so now I know I will. Thank you so much, Tom, for being with us as well. And Tom has worked on all kinds of critically acclaimed nonfiction television programs on PBS, ABC, NBC, and Showtime. I saw the film yesterday, and it just stays with you for a long period of time, partially because you stayed with these families for such a long period of time, and they are so worth knowing, and you really feel for all they've been through over a 20-year period of time. There aren't many films made, are there, Tom and Kathy, that follow somebody for so long?
No, there really aren't. I think that the Michael Apted series, the 7-Up, 14-Up, 21-Up, and such, is the great-grandfather of all these, and was certainly the inspiration for us, although when we began this project, we really didn't know we were going to follow it for so long.
Mm-hmm. What was extraordinary about it was that you pinpointed a time, and it was about 1990, 1991, where everything changed for so many working families, not just in Milwaukee, but in the country, that there was a loss of family-supporting jobs, a big loss of those jobs, and a huge, huge change in the way of life for a lot of working people, right?
We didn't fully understand that was going to be a long-term trend at that point. But, you know, when we first started working on this project, we actually were thinking about what was going to happen to people once automation and technology changed the workplace. The original assignment was, what are people going to do with all the spare time they have now that they don't really work so much?
Oh, no.
Yeah, and it dawned on us as we started doing all of our research that wasn't really the story. Yes, automation and technology and a myriad of other things were changing the nature of work in America, but you know, what that meant for workers, you know, over time became much clearer. So that's where we started this.
Mm-hmm.
Tom is the one who originally went to Milwaukee and met our families.
Yeah, we had come out. Kathy had done some research into this, and she said the place we ought to go is Milwaukee because the economy is really changing there. There had just been a lot of layoffs from some of your major employers there, including Briggs & Stratton, and I went to a union hall, and I had a meeting. I had a series of meetings. I met about 80 laid-off workers in groups of about 20. And I sat up in the front of the room, and I asked the same question of each group. I said, if you were going to turn on the TV tonight and you were going to see something on public television that was about your experience as a working person in this city, in this country at this time, who has been laid off, what would you want to see portrayed? And I just talked to lots and lots of people. And one of the people who stood out enormously was a woman named Jacqueline Stanley, who's one of the main characters in this film. And she was kind enough to invite me over to her home. And she was so determined that she was going to beat this thing. She had already taken her real estate test to go into business and sell homes. She knew her community. She knew her neighborhood. She brought me over to meet her husband and her children. And I don't know how else to describe it except to say that I felt like I was in the presence of some great Americans.
Yes.
They weren't the kind of great Americans who get on TV all the time, but they were great Americans. They were people who wanted to work hard, make a contribution to their community, and had grown up, at least the parents, with the expectation that was going to give them a place in the middle class. Not something that they were entitled to by any means, but that something that was ordinary in American life. They were going to do their part. They were going to play by all the rules. And when I met them, I was just completely taken with them and thought, these are people who I'd like to include at our show. Likewise, when I met the Newmans, their kids were a little younger, so they were a different situation. The Stanleys had older kids who were already showing this great work ethic themselves. The Newmans had little kids at that time, and they were about to lose their home. Their situation was, you know, the bank was about to foreclose. This was 1991. We think about foreclosures now as something that's kind of has become routine since the 2008 recession. But it was startling to us that here were people who were doing nothing but working hard, and they were having a hard time even hanging on to their house.
And were these people ever working hard over a 20-year period of time? I love the fact that you said these were great Americans, because isn't that the truth, Tom and Kathy? You feel that at the end of this documentary. These people are doing what you're supposed to do. They're working really hard. And in many cases, they don't see each other, and they're scraping by, and they hate getting any kind of charity, and they don't want it, and they're just upstanding, good, good people who shouldn't have to work like that for so little.
Right. And I think that's why we felt like we needed to keep coming back and keep showing their lives, because the world is changing in ways that we're not really, we keep thinking, okay, let's get everybody educated, let's send them into retraining, there's all these sort of prescriptions for this problem.
Mm-hmm.
But so far, I don't think as a nation we've had the conversation to really find the solutions to it all. Mm. And you really see it in their lives. They all went back and did what they were supposed to do at the time.
Right.
But those were short-term solutions.
This is the story of so many Americans. You know, for us to make a film, movies work because they're about people, and they're about people going through something. And Kathy and I have been fortunate enough to follow people going through something for several decades. But what is extraordinary about the Newman and the Stanley families in a television documentary is what's ordinary about American families in real life. There's so many people like the Newmans and the Stanleys.
Right. The thing that's striking about it is how generous they are, their children are, with them, until in one case it becomes just too hard for the Newmans. But they're willing to sell baseball cards. They get a lawn mowing, lawn taken care of operation together, three of the young boys in the Stanley family. And they do that. There's a lot of goodness. There's a lot of generosity in the families, and fairly strong units for a long period of time, and people who don't want to be on the receiving end of charity.
Well, it's startling that a lot of American values have survived in families like the Newmans and the Stanleys, even though the American promise that they thought had been made to them has failed them.
Right. I mean, when we first meet these families, you know, Terry Newman expects that she'll be able to stay home and raise her children, and at one point that was a reasonable expectation. And then when she realized she needed to supplement the family's income, she found out that she really couldn't afford to pay anybody to stay with her kids because the hourly wage she was able to earn was less than what she'd have to pay somebody to watch her children. And it, this has been such a dilemma for so many people. It's not that she wasn't willing to go out and do whatever was necessary. And the problem at some point, I think, with families at least becomes, you know, what happens to the children if the parents are just working around the clock.
And what happens to a marriage, too, if you never see your spouse, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And that and money tensions are always up front from the minute you walk into the door. You know, it's very difficult. So, and I think we document that pretty well with these families. And the kids, I think, really, you really see what happens to the next generation. Or the you know, the tensions that the kids feel. They want to help. They want to be part of the solution as well.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that's striking is what happens to you, and it's the Stanleys who really experience this. If you have jobs, and they do, very minimal benefits or no benefits at all, no vacation time, no overtime, no health benefits, you can really be wiped out.
One of the things in the very first film we made that included these two families, which was called Minimum Wages, The New Economy, which aired in 1992, one of the things we said at the end of that film was something to the effect that, and remember, this is 20 years ago, something to the effect that America's biggest problem in the future is going to be what happens when a paycheck and poverty go hand in hand.
Mm-hmm.
And back then, that seemed like sort of new and scary thinking. And nowadays, it's become all too true for so many working people. We've heard the stories of people who have full-time jobs and still are getting food stamps because they're not paid enough even for the most basic family needs to be covered.
Sure, or a major operation just wipes them out if they don't have the proper health insurance. It's just a tenuous and scary existence.
The other thing that really was eye-opening and so saddening was you hear Terry at the beginning of the film, and she has her young children, and she wants to raise good kids, and it's the desire for them to have a life that's at least as good as what you have. And by golly, by the end of the film in 2012, her children are struggling just like she did.
Yes. Yes. And it's a tough circumstance. I mean, you know, again, you see the tensions in the home. You also know in the backdrop, without us even reporting it, that the public school system is suffering as well, that, you know, there isn't necessarily counseling and all the kinds of things that we might have had at one point. It's an investment question, and you know, how are we going to invest in this next generation?
But as you know, Kathleen, if your listeners watch the show, they're going to see that though the Newman children are struggling just like their parents did, the Newman children continue to work hard and persevere just like their parents did.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, that's a very important point.
Yes, it is. They have those values instilled in them because of their family units, too, that are so strong, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
They're all working.
They sure are working. They sure are working. We're going to welcome phone calls. I know that many of you... What happened? I got a couple Facebook messages, Tom and Kathy, today. Was something aired last night that gave a preview of Frontline tomorrow?
Yes. Bill Moyers has a weekly show called Moyers and...
Yes.
And he showed excerpts from the first programs that we did between the year 2002 when did we do it?
1992
and 2000.
So Bill showed excerpts of the program that aired in 2000. Tomorrow's film is the fourth in a series. We had done the original film that aired in 1992. We went back with Frontline, shot in 1993 and 1995, and aired a story then. And then in 2000, We did a film called Surviving the Good Times, which was all about, you know, Americans who were trying to survive during this glorious Clinton era when everyone was supposed to be getting rich and supposedly getting rich when it wasn't really true. So on Bill's website right now, BillMoyers.com, there's actually a streaming preview where he shows some of the old footage. And then tomorrow night's film will combine some of that older footage with some of the brand new footage of where the Newmans and the Stanleys are at today.
Well, we'll advise people to go to that, BillMoyers.com, so you can get a preview of what really I think is necessary viewing tomorrow night. It's just so well done. It's a, as I've described it, a, you can't miss it, documentary. And it also, the families are from Milwaukee, so you'll know the surroundings and the companies that are referred to and the neighborhoods and all of that, the Stanleys and the Newmans. Our phone number for you, oh my gosh, we have a full bank of phone lines. We'll go to your phone calls momentarily. 800-486-8655. Two American Families airing tomorrow on Frontline. And we're speaking this hour with the filmmakers, the writers, the producers of this film, and they've also been involved for 20 years now in this, as Tom said, four-part series. To you momentarily, this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we are going to phone calls now for Kathleen Hughes and Tom Casciato. They are the producers, filmmakers, writers of tomorrow night's Frontline, which centers on two American families, covers them for 20 years. Two American Families, the name of this documentary. Joanne is our first caller in West Dallas. Hi, Joanne.
Hi, thank you. I just had a question. I was wondering if this documentary will be available for purchase at all. The reason being, I talk to so many people who talk about our nation of moochers and that people are poor because they want to be poor, and I'd just like to for those people to see this film.
Well, I think Frontline, you know, this is a PBS Frontline film. I think they probably do sell the DVDs. It will also be streaming at the pbs.org/frontline site where people will be able to see it for free as well. So we're grateful that you want people to see it, and they may not even have to buy it. Not that that would make them moochers.
Do you think there is a perception of the people who you document, and obviously people don't know them or they would never think of calling them moochers, but is there this perception, and I wonder who has it, that there are a lot of people in this country who are moochers?
Well, I think you do hear that, yes. And I think that, you know, I think a film like ours is or ought to be the absolute antidote for that sort of attitude. And I think that's one of the reasons we felt like it was so important to go back and see these people again and really document over a long period of time, not just a quick window, which as television producers we often do when we meet people. We know them for a couple of months. We put something on television. But very much to counter that idea of people who are moochers, I think we wanted to show these people over time and how hard they were working.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, remember Mitt Romney's 47% comment?
Yes.
You know, this idea that people aren't carrying their weight. I think it runs. There's currents of it throughout our system, and it's the wrong. I think it's. I'm glad we can make this film, and I think it's very brave of the Newmans and the Stanleys to put themselves out there, because they do become somehow the subject of some of that criticism, and it's not really fair.
And no doubt there are some people in any society who aren't carrying their weight, but if you're a working American and you hear this kind of comment and you look at your family and you look at your co-workers, and you probably just shrug your shoulders and say, well, you know, what are you going to do? If people want to believe that, I guess they'll believe it. Meanwhile, we get up and go to work every day.
Right. Thanks, Joanne, for the call. Ray in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. This has been an interesting discussion so far, but I really don't care about the human interest side of it. My family lived through all of this. I'm a union member right now. I want you reporters to be like pit bulls and go after the politicians, Democrats and Republicans both, who sold us out. They took our tax dollars, gave tax breaks to these corporations to move the very jobs overseas. My family members helped crate up stuff that went to China, and they were like in tears as they were doing it. You know, they had worked at these places 20, 30 years. And then one day, a group of men come in and say, everybody's fired, but for the next week, we need a small skeleton crew to crate up everything and show some of these guys actually how to operate this machinery, so when they get to China or Mexico or Bangladesh, they can work for 2 cents an hour. Why isn't the discussion more on the politicians who have sold us out?
All right, Ray, thanks very much for the call. Tom,
well,
Kathy?
I mean, that's an excellent question, and I would direct the caller to a piece that Kathy Hughes produced with Bill Moyers, which is streaming at Bill Moyers' website, with two academics named Hacker and Pearson, who wrote a book called Winner Take All Politics. And Bill and Kathy did, I think, an entire program devoted to the very
several
thing that
programs.
The caller is
mm-hmm.
several programs in total, devoted to the very thing that the caller is talking about. I think that he's right to ask for that sort of reporting.
You're right, and the subtitle was called How Washington Made the Rich Richer and Turned Its Back on the Middle Class. And there is a lot to be discussed, and we feel like a film like this hopefully will allow some of that discussion to take place. It's a very important conversation.
It is important, and the film, because there is such a long period of time here, makes you think. We've been through how many different administrations since this film started, and yet that very core of what this is about, that you can't work hard and make a living anymore, and it's way too hard, and people are exhausted, and there are certain things that you ought to be able to have in your life, like health care or a little vacation every now and then, that is lost to so many people. And you contrast that with what's happening with the blessings, which are so overflowing at the top that you wonder what everybody's doing with all of that. And yet you haven't had anybody try to change it for these families. You just want to say, come on, they need to have a better life and they're worthy of it. And so are all the people who are like them. And somebody do something, right?
We've followed these families through four administrations, Bush, Clinton, the younger Bush, and Obama. And each of those presidents has had something to say about it.
Right, right.
But the doing, I think we're all still waiting for.
Yeah.
Yeah, the doing doesn't seem to be getting done.
No, it sure doesn't. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, and we are talking about the documentary, which will air tomorrow night on Frontline, Two American Families. It's the fourth in a series, and it's an extraordinary piece of work. It follows two Milwaukee families for more than 20 years. They had good family-supporting jobs. They lose the jobs. They go overseas. And what's happened to these families and their children as their children have gone into adulthood. And it airs tomorrow on PBS. Let's go to Rich and Rhinelander next. Hi, Rich.
Hi, Kathleen. Hi, Gus. I watched last night, and these young couples, I mean, they're much younger than I am, the Stanleys and the Newmans, deserve at least as much opportunity as I had as a young person. And they're not getting it. And they're not getting it because, as the analyst guests, after Bill Moyers queued up the film, he had two women on, and your guest today could probably tell me if those are the two that wrote the book that was just referred to. But I'm with Ray, your previous caller. This concept of globalization is represented as a benign concept.
Exactly.
And in the meantime, thousands of young people are dying in Southeast Asia in substandard working conditions. American families are obviously suffering great hardship economically. And as the two women on Moyer's show last night said, this did not happen by accident. This was by design. This is not benign. I'm
right.
Calling.
Not the weather.
I want to get on some list. I really do. Maybe next call will be from prison. I think we need a revolution. I'd like a peaceful revolution. If we can't have a peaceful revolution, I predict there's going to be a very, very angry revolution among people who simply say, this doesn't make sense. Our children need a future.
You're absolutely, I mean, it seems that a lot more people are starting to feel like you do. And I think lots of academics, lots of journalists are slowly starting to go back and trying to, and look at, you know, what policies have helped families or not helped families, and what policies have really allowed big American companies to not only, you know, leave the country, but when they're here, to bust unions and to pay people lower and lower wages and no benefits. You know,
For the record, those two guests on Bill Moyer's show last night were not the people we were talking about. The people who wrote the book that we're speaking about are called Jacob Hacker and Paul Pearson, Pierson. And the two women on Bill Moyer's show were Barbara Miner and Barbara Garson. They may have had some similar things to talk about. But I think winner-take-all politics is a good place to start. I think reading Hedrick Smith's book, Who Stole the American Dream, George Packer's book, The Unwinding, there's been a lot of reporting about this. We're far from the only ones who are talking about this. I think what's unique about our work, if there's anything unique, it's the longitudinal nature of it. That you're really able to, this is a movie, you're able to, this is not an academic study, you're able to see real and quite regular Americans going through the economic and subsequently the emotional upheaval of the last several decades before your eyes. Their children grow up before your eyes. What has happened, I think, becomes in a way undeniable when it's documented like this.
Yeah. George Packer, we just had him on last week. That's a great book, too, isn't it?
Sorry. Yes, terrific.
Good. Really, really good.
I would recommend it.
The other thing that, and maybe it was just the families you found here, but there's something about both of those families that, and maybe they're just too tired because they're working so hard. It's just so hard. But there seemed to be just a lack of anger among all of the families. There was a... there was just a goodness about them. Well, this is what we do, and this is what our values are, and you can't see all these people marching in the streets because, A, they're too busy, and, B, they just don't... They're not blaming a lot of people, are they?
I wouldn't dare to speak for the Newmans or the Stanleys, but I do think that a lot of people are both too tired to be angry and also too determined.
Mm-hmm.
Ready to stand it up and say, you know, damn it, I'm going to make it whatever it takes, and I'm going to keep on persevering, and I'm not going to, some people might try to blame me, but I'm not going to blame anybody else. I'm going to keep my shoulder to this and just keep going. And I think if you don't have that attitude, you can really slip beneath the windows of, beneath the wheels of this big truck that's rolled over a lot of working people.
Yeah. One of the families, the Stanley family, is black, and I'm wondering, Jackie is in real estate, and I'm wondering how, because you also are focusing on one of the most racially segregated parts of the country, the Milwaukee County area is. Did the issue of race play into this in any way? And if you want to focus the answer on Jackie, it seemed as though it did in some way with selling real estate.
Yes, if you do watch our you know, all of our films over time, you definitely get the feeling both from Jackie and from people who have employed Jackie that it's a much harder thing for an African-American real estate agent to sell homes than for a non-African-American real estate agent to sell homes. And there is a certain amount of restriction of what areas you can sell in and a certain limit as to how expensive those houses are, so that your commissions are not great. So that's always been, you know, again, I don't want to speak for Jackie, but that is something she has told us on the record that she has experienced. And she's also someone who is very confident, and she says, you know, I could sell ice to an Eskimo. And
right.
If you watch this film and you meet Jackie, I think you will agree that she can.
But she is well aware.
But that is something I think that she's always up against.
Right.
Yes. She is aware of the racial disparity and the tougher time that African Americans have in Milwaukee, and it's you know, she's not naively going about, you know, her business. It's something she has to really consider and fight and deal with day in and day out, as do her children.
But she's never used it as a crutch, and she's never used it as an excuse.
Thanks, Rich, for your call. Doug in Beloit. Hi.
Hi. I'm really enjoying the new time slot and this program. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Doug.
I've just been noticing that it seems like, especially here in Wisconsin, just that there's a lot of political rhetoric that has turned very cruel, where we hear about this entitlement society and that people are getting things that they don't deserve. And I see the exact opposite things happening. Yeah, even, let's say, someone is convicted of a felony when they're 19 years old and they're from a family in poverty, all the tools to lift them out of their poverty, whether that's federal student loan grants or being able to get a job, or are completely restricted from them. So we have this vicious cycle going on, and that most people have just turned a blind eye to this, and we don't even hear about this corporate welfare state that has emerged in the last 30 years. Mm. And I was just wondering your guest's perspective on how the criminal justice system plays in all this.
Thank you, Doug.
I wish we had time for another 20-year documentary on that.
No, it's true.
Yeah. And it's interesting. We were talking about student loans the first hour of our program today. It's interesting. The only college graduate of all of the people who are featured here, Keith, I think his name, Stanley, has to use a credit card to get through college. And he works for the city now with Alderman Hines' assistant, chief of staff. But he had to use a credit card to get through college.
Pretty stunning scene. I remember when I shot that, which was in the, if I recall correctly, probably about 1999 when Keith was a student at Alabama State University. He showed me his credit card bill, and he told us about the almost preposterous interest rate he was paying just to stay in college. And then, you know, all over campus, there were these signs saying, get your credit card, no interest, first year, sign up. You know, the whole system was set up to bring these kids in and put them into a certain amount of debt.
Doug, thanks for the call. Dave, Wisconsin Rapids, hi.
Good afternoon, Kathleen, and to your guests. My wife and I watched the Bill Moyers show last night. Just a side comment. Now, I presume that the four Romney sons with their multimillion-dollar trust are not considered takers, although that wouldn't qualify them as givers. But there was an interesting cultural, you referred to the racial thing. One of the things, the program was both discouraging and inspiring at the same time, but it kind of blew up the stereotype that many people have of the black families, the African-American families who are moochers and takers and so forth. But this has been going on for a long time. I'm 77 years old, and I've seen the decline of unions in this country, and there are charts that will show you the decline of the standard of living parallels the decline of unions, whether you're a union member or not. And prior to the last governor election, we were able to witness a video clip of our governor with one of his prime funders, who was gushingly asking him if he would get right-to-work laws here in the state of Wisconsin. Of course, that's when he commented about divide and conquer. And this woman, who's a multi-billionaire, is looking for right-to-work laws in Wisconsin, presumably so that her employees can earn less and perhaps she can have a little more. I don't know where this is going to end, but the fellow from Rhinelander who speaks of some sort of a revolution, I think, is on target, particularly if people realize that they're being played off one against the other, the public employees against the private employees, and the different racial groups being played off against themselves and used as scapegoats.
Thank you, Dave, for the call. Kathleen, Tom?
Well, the scene that the caller is talking about is from a very fine film by a Milwaukee filmmaker, Brad Lichtenstein, which is called As Goes Janesville, which was a very fair-minded look at the town of Janesville and attempts to bring new work to it. And I think that the feeling you get from what your caller is saying and from watching that clip in the film is that the working person is in for a tough time in the future, and making it and making it into the middle class is going to become harder and harder.
Absolutely. I think if you're a corporate executive in most companies, keeping your wages low is what you're rewarded for. You know, you don't want to spend that money if you don't have to. And this, you know, and so we're there in a tough position, I suppose. You could imagine, if you have one of those jobs and your board is breathing down your neck to cut your costs. Labor costs are very expensive. So you know, at some point we really do have to figure out what we're going to do about all of this. There used to be something called shared prosperity that we all felt like maybe we all, you know, were in this together. But I'm not sure that our corporations are allowed to participate in our communities that way any longer.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk just a little bit more, because it seems to be a theme of a lot of the calls. And here's an email, Lisa, wanting to know how much of all of this can be blamed on the death of the union movement and how it affected people who weren't members of unions as well. Clearly, people can work until they drop and still barely keep their heads above water. Something is dreadfully wrong here.
Well, you know, our film, like the Newmans and the Stanleys themselves, is not really a blame-laying film.
No, it's not.
It's really not our purpose to lay blame. We certainly invite people to draw their own conclusions and to watch more films and read more books and learn more about it. So rather than getting into any blame, I think I would just repeat what I said before, is that it's going to be a very tough time.
More phone calls momentarily. We're speaking this hour of the program, getting a preview of a show that I hope you'll see tomorrow night on Frontline on PBS, Two American Families. It's the fourth in a series following the Stanleys and the Newmans for 20 years, and they are Milwaukee families who had good family-supporting jobs. The jobs went overseas, and their earnings went way down, and their ability to really make ends meet, very, very difficult for both families, even though they are just, as Tom has said, one of our guests, great Americans. And they are. They're just great Americans. So we're talking this hour. The correspondent for the Two American Families is Bill Moyers. The filmmakers are with us this hour of the program, Tom Casciato and Kathleen Hughes. They are Emmy Award-winning producers, directors, and writers. More phone calls in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We have one line open. We've been really busy this hour, so if you've been trying to get through, you could call now. 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. Please leave messages on our Facebook page. I like to read them. We all like to read each other's Facebook comments. That's the Kathleen Dunn Show. Or you can do an email to the show, talk@WPR.org. Patrick is our next caller in Madison. Hi, Patrick.
Hi, Kathleen. Great. I was just wondering if your guest knows of a company or a corporation that ever went or was ever founded, you know, on a different model, one that goes against greed, one that actually paid good wages, one that everyone profited, and there weren't, you know, overpaid CEOs or anything. I mean, has that ever existed?
You know, the company people always talk about is Costco. Do you guys have Costco in Milwaukee?
Yes, we do. I hear that too.
I'm not. This is not an ad for Costco, and I'm not. I'm not a paid spokesperson for Costco. But I would. I would advise the caller to Google Costco and their labor practices, because that is a company that is often cited as one that manages to keep its jobs here in the United States, pay a living wage with decent benefits, and people still seem to be able to make a profit. That's the one I hear about.
Hmm. Well, maybe that's the next documentary, Kathy and Tom, right? You could focus on those kinds of companies.
I'll tell you, the documentary we're not going to make is the one about how technology was going to give us all this free time.
Oh, right. Isn't that true? That one's just gone.
was about the most naive thing I think that's ever been presented to us.
Yeah. And maybe we should do a show on that, Patrick. We'll do a show on the best companies to work for. That would be, you know, we'll highlight the good.
That's a good idea.
It is a good
idea.
Great
idea.
All right. We'll do that. Thanks, Patrick, for the call. Let's go next to Judy in Horicon. Hi, Judy.
Hello.
Hi.
I believe the buck stops with the Supreme Court back when they said money equals speech. Mm-hmm. And Citizens United. I mean, the rich people and the corporate leaders pour money into the campaigns of the lawmakers, and they've got them right in the palm of their hand. And so they listen to the rich people and ignore the middle class and the poor. Money talks.
Tom?
Tom?
I'm waiting for a question.
Yeah.
Do you want to respond? Well, you don't have to respond. Do you want to respond to her comments?
No, I think that I'm not sure that anything all begins with the Citizens United decision, because a lot of things have been going on that have affected working people in America for decades before anyone ever heard of Citizens United.
I think what's happened has led us to Citizens United to some extent, as you know, companies, as you know, as unions have become less and less powerful, the voice of the working person in the state capitol and in Washington has not been as loud. And it certainly, if you just look at sheer dollar numbers, the amount of money that you know the Chamber of Commerce is able to spend versus most unions is much less, in spite of the you know the rhetoric. So that's one way to think about it. If you just look at it in dollar terms.
And again, you know, this is really, you know, what we're talking about is very interesting, and we're hoping that our film will spur these kinds of discussions, and we're thrilled that it's doing this on your show right now, Kathleen, but it isn't what our film is about. Our film is about the experience of these Americans.
Right, yeah. Well, it's amazing. It's sparking all this discussion. They haven't seen the film
hopefully,
yet.
Hopefully, you know? At dinner tables in Milwaukee and around
really?
The country.
Wait till Wednesday. Everybody will be talking about it on Wednesday.
We'll look at your face that day.
All right. All right. Good. Judy, right. Thanks very much for your call. 800-486-8655 is our number. I'm interested because both of you have such a long-term involvement, which is a fairly big thing in and of itself. I was so struck, and I was saddened, I must say, to see, particularly for the Newman children, how difficult their lives were. And I'm wondering, you're human beings in addition, you're good human beings because you're doing these kinds of films, to have been so welcomed and to be able to portray the lives so honestly of these two families. What were both of you thinking when you saw how the children had to struggle and that the parents were still struggling all these years later?
Well, I guess I would answer that first of all by saying that we have what we consider to be the best job in the world.
Mm.
One of your callers earlier was talking about stereotypes of certain kinds of people before, and you know we get to get out and just meet people, and we see stereotypes, you know, crash and burn before our eyes all the time, because when you meet people, you find out that they're very complicated and much more interesting than any kind of stereotype could ever come up with. And I'm sure Kathy agrees, always felt like it's a tremendous privilege to be able to portray these people's lives. And I'm very grateful for them allowing Kathy and allowing me and our camera crews into their homes at various times over the last 20 years and into their experiences. I think that's a tremendous privilege. And it's, you know, it's fantastic to be able to portray that.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's hard. You know, I think the caller asked earlier about, you know, what it's like. I mean, we just, to some extent, you want to think it's going to get better. And so when we go back out, you know, you want to believe just because you hear politicians talking on the radio or you hear some good economic reports that perhaps finally now things are going to turn and finally the economy is going to improve for all of us. And then, you know, I think what makes this film powerful is the reality that things aren't really turning, and so for us to go back and see how hard it's been for the next generation is you know it's a little tough, but we, as Tom said, we're honored that they're allowing us in and allowing the people to experience it as well.
Yeah. And you're reminded that not only are the economic situations that these people find themselves in difficult, but you're also reminded when you go see them that they're really good folks, and really good folks in the face of this difficult economic time. So there's, I think the film is inspiring in that way.
It is,
and gives
it
you
is.
You know, it gives you some faith. If not in the economic future necessarily, but in the human spirit and the willingness to persevere and not give up.
James in Milwaukee is our next caller. Hi, James.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment and let you guys know that I'm a millennial and that a lot of us are watching TED Talks. We have read The Social Animal. We watch Frontline, and a lot of us that are fortunate enough to graduate from college and get stable careers are going to try to make an effort to not run away from our homes, not to gentrify and try to solve the issues right here at home, because we know that the government and those higher up aren't going to do much for us.
So what are you doing, James?
Well, right now I'm kind of working my way through college, mm-hmm. obviously with the raising interest rates and overall higher rates of college, and I have to pay my way through.
Mm-hmm. We wish you luck, James.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, James, go get them.
I'll try.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Yep.
Let's go to Jim next in Reedsburg. Hi, Jim.
Hi. As your one of your guests said, the Stanleys and the other name are good people, and I'd submit that that's not good enough. They've got to, every week, participate in collective actions, whether it's going to union meetings or political parties. They've got to match what the Koch brothers and the rest are doing with their billfolds. Where we come from, we're lucky if we get five or six people day in and day out, month in and month out. The people that did the sit-down strikes in Michigan against Henry Ford were in the hundreds. They had nothing. And that's what they got to be willing to risk. The younger people I talk to now haven't got a clue about what went on in this country in the 30s. And until they do, I don't expect anything to get better. In fact, I'm predicting Walker wins again.
All right, Jim, thank you very much for your comments. Tom in Neenah, hi.
Yes, there was some talk before about revolution, mm-hmm. and it seems to me that we're getting what we vote for. And if we're really a democracy, I don't understand why we can't vote people in that will do things in concern for people. So I wish somebody would explain that to me. I'll hang up and listen.
All right, thanks very much for the call. I think that, and I thought that this was such an accurate comment. I believe it was Keith who said the young kid who in the early part of the film, and then he goes on to be in politics himself,
yeah.
And an honest, great politician. But he said, you know, he was watching television in terms of politicians and people for running for office. They say a lot of stuff to get on top.
Yeah, he's saying that as he's watching Bill Clinton being inaugurated, as a matter of fact. Your callers, Kathleen, sound like real Wisconsinites. That's all I can say. having spent a lot of time in your wonderful city and state, they are very familiar to me.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. I'm sorry we didn't meet both of you when you were here for all of this time. It would have been a good thing to have done.
You bet.
But I'm glad to have met you now. We're almost out of time. We have so much response, and I'm sure you'll have an enormous response to this documentary. And thank you. Thank you so much for doing this. It's on tomorrow night, and it's either, 9 o'clock or 8 o'clock? People should look at the TV guide.
We always say, check those local listings.
We do say that. Check those local listings. Thank you both. You were terrific guests, and you're very creative people doing, must make you good to feel good to know that you're doing important work.
Thank you, Kathleen.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Yeah, my pleasure. Our pleasure. Tom Casciato and Kathleen Hughes, they are Emmy Award-winning producers, directors, and writers. And their program, The Correspondent, is Bill Moyers, will be on tomorrow on Frontline. and check to see what time it's on television. We thought we would do a follow-up. Well, we'll do. This show has prompted a couple follow-ups. One is to look at the really good companies in this country that are very fair to their employees, that pay a decent wage. We'll do that. We'll find them. And if you have any suggestions of those companies, put them on our Facebook page. Would you do that, the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we'll go after them, because that would be a good show to do. And we also thought at some point we'll feature a couple of the people who were in this film to talk to them. So watch the film and then we'll have them on. And thanks to KP Whaley and Rhonda Fanning.